Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
So Barry Corder, when we hit the record button, he said, we should start every show from now on with Dolly Parton. Well, we are starting with my Dolly Parton. And my big prediction for 2020 is Brittany Howard getting a major slot at night on a main stage because, oh my God, is her solo album amazing. Her solo show is phenomenal. And she's one of many artists that at least I've seen over the past 6 months that I absolutely think will have a major, major role in 2020.
I could see that. Absolutely see that. And I know you're kind of a big fan.
Just a bit,
just
yes.
Just a touch.
Yeah, just a touch. And it all started at that Bonnaroo show on the This Tent, seeing Alabama Shakes, which was one of the most amazing moments of my Bonnaroo career, is watching a band blow up right before my eyes.
It's the best, isn't it?
It is such a good feeling, and knowing it's happening, and knowing it's happening in the moment. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Feels great.
I get it, and you're like on Christmas card level now, aren't you?
With me and Brittany,
you
with
met
Brett,
the fam.
Yeah,
I did. Met her dad.
I did meet dad. Yeah, I finally got to meet dad, and it was a very weird story when I saw her at the Ryman. I was standing there, and now, granted, I had a feeling like the record people sort of prepared her, but they weren't around. So I have to say, like, nobody that would have known me was around to prepare her for me being there. So I'm sitting there talking to KJ and blah, 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 blah. I turn around and there's Brittany Howard and she goes, Brad, how are you?
Yeah, see,
that's a feeling, man. That's a feeling.
It's one of two or three things. Either she remembers you because you're so annoying, or the record people said the annoying guy in there is going to be called Brad.
Yeah.
Or she just likes you.
Maybe. We'll see. So welcome back. Bonnaroo 2020 quickly approaching. I guess this is a little one-off episode that we're doing just to say hi and remind you that we're still alive.
Yeah.
Still doing okay.
It's a funny story I'm embarrassed to share. But this
what
is kind of what happens to me.
What do you mean?
Well, I was on one of those Google invitations for a calendar.
It's called Tinder.
Invitation. And lo and behold, I get an acceptance from Jeff Cuellar, who said, yeah, I'm happy to do the podcast on blah, blah, blah. And I looked and I thought, I don't remember inviting you to do this. But we saw him. I saw him at Moon River, and he said, I'm looking forward to next Tuesday.
Yeah, I think you're missing a big part of the story.
Which
in that you were probably six drinks in.
No,
when you made the Google invite.
Before.
Really? I thought it was like the night of that you made the invite to him, and he's like, sure, I'll be there tomorrow.
No. It was weeks before, but it was at the, I think I tell this story later, the bourbon that Drew Holcomb and the Moon River people had curated especially for Moon River.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it until after I'd had about three shots that it had like 118 proof
nice.
Or something.
Well, good for you.
I had a really good time.
Yeah, so we have Jeff Cuellar on today from AC Entertainment, and we go through a couple of things. First, we talk about Moon River, which is the boutique festival we sort of talked about last season that's here in Chattanooga. It happens right there on the riverfront, and it is diametrically opposed to the other music festival we have in this town, which is total garbage. It's exactly the worst music festival in the country versus damn near one of the best music festivals in the country. And I really do, if you get a chance and you live close enough to Chattanooga, check out Moon River if you're into this type of Americana sort of music. It is so well done. So we talk a little bit of Moon River. We talk a little bit about Exit 111 Fest, which is coming up if you're listening to this pretty, close to the 1st of October.
Yeah,
it's happening next weekend at the Farm in Manchester. And then we get into a little bit of Bonnaroo 2020 talk. Before we get into that, though, I want to sort of the whole point of this was I made a list of artists that I truly thought were going to be at Bonnaroo next year. And you probably are doing the same thing right now at home. Not necessarily a wish list. So don't really give us a wish list. Give us an idea of bands that you think are actually going to be there. I've got my list, and I made this the 1st of July. Okay. I've even got it numbered. And since then, two of my bands that I absolutely were convinced were going to be there have already said no. Yeah. And that's a little bit piece of news that I wanted to share with you. I didn't know that this was all... I don't know if it's already officially out there. I don't know if somebody's actually said this, but I got an absolute confirmation that two artists specifically will not be a Bonnaroo.
Yeah, and one of them you were all in on, right?
All in.
I mean, betting the house
type of thing.
Yeah, I was like right there with you.
And it was my big bet.
Not only was I with you on it, but I thought one of the key people in the group might be very much involved in the Super Jam.
Yeah.
After we talked about that. Yeah. I could see that happening.
So I'll just go ahead and give you what I know. And I can, first off, I know 50-50 for the Black Keys. It's 50-50 on the Black Keys. They don't have a confirmation yes, and they don't have an absolute no. It's a lean no currently. But I'm giving that a 50-50 because you just don't know when, you know, push comes to shove. The money gets handed to you.
Right.
If you're a yes or no. I was convinced they were going to be there, but I've actually heard some things. In fact, I can't say this, but I'm going to write it down to Barry so that he knows that my sources are good. Okay. So this is what's actually going to happen. And that happens next year, and I don't know how that really works. I don't know how that's going to work with the Black Keys. I'll just put it that way. So it could happen. It could very well happen. All right. Secondly, this is absolutely for sure. Billie Eilish is out. Absolutely out.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah. And so and I know she's got some tour dates in and around like June in Europe. So you could probably have already done the guesswork on this. But I got the official out from somebody I know.
I just love her. She's one that I would add on my list that I would actually travel to go see.
Well, here's the thing.
Which is a short list for me.
I've seen the show a few times. The first one I saw in Lollapalooza, it was very strange. I was like, wow, this girl has got it, right? She's absolutely, she pulls you in a way that, like, I don't remember, you know, a 17-year-old ever doing that before.
Right.
And then she has this amazing arena tour that people go crazy about. Then the Music Midtown thing happened. And I don't know what the difference from, you know, a year and a half ago to this year, but boy, the crowd that was there, at least, and maybe it's a Music Midtown problem, which, by the way, I think is a terrible festival. I think just it's ran awfully. Awfully. Is that a word?
Awfully.
Okay. All right. Hey, you're the writer. You tell me.
Yeah.
You're the smart one in the group.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad. So,
horrible.
The crowd was horrible. It was horrible for that Billie Eilish show, so I didn't even stay. I didn't even watch it.
Yeah, well, that happens. I think she's great. Everything she does, from the Hot Ones episode that I've seen to just the way she treats her fans. So that's a shame.
Look,
I was hoping to see her.
I do Top 40 Radio. I don't think that there has been a more challenging and a better song in maybe the Top 40 format than Bad Guy. The fact that was so difficult for radio to wrap their head around and find a place for, on top of that, the lyrical content with it, the way it was produced, it's totally different than anything that Top 40 has damn near ever heard.
Yeah.
I mean, I equate it to maybe Smells Like Teen Spirit breaking through to Top 40 Radio. That's as impactful as I think Bad Guy was for this format. So that's the one that I absolutely know is out. And as far as an actual show, Chance the Rapper is out. Now, these were two names that I had in my top four. And that really, really, that really screws up my list.
Well, I mean, I don't really do the prediction lists. I just don't spend as much time on it as you do and some other people. But I think there were several people on your list that I would agree with. I don't have your list.
Okay. I'll go through it. Top two names, Black Keys, Chance the Rapper. Whoopsies.
Scratch.
My third one was Zedd. I'm just putting his name there because it's got to have some sort of EDM at the top.
Right.
Look, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know much about EDM, so I just put Zedd there. That's my EDM slot. And then I think one that we all agree on is going to be there in a major way, and that's Tame Impala.
Yeah.
that there's just it makes too much sense to come back, put him on the what stage, make it a late night show or a 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock show with that light show for, you know, let them do their 2 hour jam set, which, you know, they sit on that line of being acceptable to the jam community. Whatever, you know, you they had too much success with the jam world last year to not do it again this year.
Yeah, no, they're gonna do it.
Now let me ask you this. My next one on the list is My Morning Jacket. Now, I don't have a natural jam spot, right? I don't have a Widespread Panic like a lot of people are guessing, or a String Cheese Incident, which I don't think can hold the what, damn near, maybe not even the witch. But I do think a combination of My Morning Jacket and Tame Impala, do you think that makes the Fish crowd happy? Do you think it brings those Fish people back like
maybe
they did last year?
I was thinking Warren Haynes in some capacity as well, which, I mean, it could be Widespread and Warren, or, you know, Warren used to be the Chance the Rapper of Bonnaroo for many, many years, and I don't remember the last time he was there. So he would be on my list.
I gotcha.
And I don't know what configuration My Morning Jacket, you know, I'm a huge fan, but I don't like read up every day. We had Jim James there last year, so mm-hmm. they come back with the full band. Maybe that could make some sense.
Okay.
And it's been a while since they've been there. So.
My next name is Billie Eilish. That's absolutely out. And then I've got Brittany Howard way up there. Now, I went through a whole other list of bands that just make sense, like, 1975, Bass Nectar, Janelle Monae, even Kelsea Ballerini, if they want to keep coming back to this young country dynamic. But then way, way, way down my list, and maybe 15 down, is Lizzo.
Yeah.
Now, what's happened with Lizzo since we talked to you last is unlike anything that I've seen. She has become the biggest artist on the planet.
Yeah.
And she is shooting up festival lineups. The fact that she's on the ACL lineup, as low as she is stunning at this point. But come next year, Bonnaroo, if she's doing the festival circuit, you can better believe she's going to be in the top three lines.
Yep. She's on mine. She would be definitely a prediction for me. And then much shorter list, but I'm going to predict, because of the huge success of country music, the Ken Burns documentary, that we're going to see something. A Kris Kristofferson, a Marty Stewart.
Okay, one step better, which was on my list. I didn't mention him. I've got him number six, Zach Brown.
Yeah, could be. Been kind of quiet lately.
He has been very quiet, and Zach Brown does arenas, and he does big setups like this. So he would have, and by the way, has all the friends in the world in Nashville to make some sort of like Zach Brown country super jam happen.
Yeah. I just think they have to capitalize on that. I mean, that documentary, we talked about it every single day at work. You know, we don't talk about anything every single day at the paper, but that people kept huddling, you know, I mean, it was a complete water cooler thing.
I see your point. I think you're off just a touch. I think that the country lane is definitely something, but it's a younger, more traditional country, not an older traditional country.
At Bonnaroo?
Yeah.
Perhaps, but I mean, they've done the legacy acts before.
I know, but give me the last one they did.
Wanda Jackson.
Wanda Jackson was a long time ago. Kenny Rogers was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We kind of thought Lionel was going to be in that lane because he'd just done the country album, but he came and did, you know, his wedding singer stuff.
I mean, unless you're giving me Dolly, which we talk about that with Quayar a little bit. Unless you're giving me Dolly, I don't think older country is where they're going.
Perhaps not. I'm just thinking of the songwriter aspect of it that was highlighted so much. I think people were fascinated by the Kristofferson. And, you know, Marty Stewart was such a key element to that documentary. That's why I'm thinking of him. I don't know that I have a specific name.
Oh, I do, now that I think about it.
I have a feeling they're going to get...
What about Robert Earl?
Robert Earl...
Now, you could give me... I think they could go into a lane of, like, renegade country.
Yeah,
like outlaw country
Steve
stuff.
Earl,
Steve Earl. Steve Earl is what I mean, not Robert Earl.
Robert Earl. Robert Earl Keen, is that what you think?
Yeah, I was thinking Robert Earl.
I was thinking Steve Earl.
Steve Earl. Steve Earl is exactly what I was thinking.
I think they definitely could.
Now, you give me, how about this? Now, here's a conspiracy theory. You put Steve Earl on a lineup, and you put the Foo Fighters on a lineup.
Ooh, I just talked to a couple of guys, band called the White Animals were here in town this week, and a couple of them, we had lunch, and they had just seen the Foo Fighters at Pilgrimage. And it was terrific, as you can imagine. So, yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. That's one that hadn't been there in
a long time.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So I do understand where you're going. So you got the country lane that they're absolutely going to, I think, have to satisfy because it just makes too much sense, especially after all of the infrastructure they've built for Nashville, right?
Yes, that's exactly.
Then secondly, I think that they are absolutely going to come back to this jam crowd. They saw too much success with Phish. They saw too much of their people back, and they see... If I'm them, I see the hole in the market.
Yeah.
Just as a dollar and cents. These are the people that we have to super serve. How do we do it? Now, here's a conversation I had the other day. I don't know. That music base has not grown. It's the same names every year. There's not a new jam band that's come onto the scene that everybody's like, this is the next step. That's why I sort of ask, does Tame Impala... My Morning Jacket sort of make that world happy.
That's a great point. You know, it's Umphrey's, Strung, Widespread, Phish.
Yeah, where's the new one?
And who?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great point.
And they're going to get beat up if they put Widespread Panic number 3 or 4. They're going to get beat up about doing the same old thing over again. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
That's
as a business decision.
I like a Warren Haynes, Derek Trucks band. But Warren, I mean, my gosh, he plays with everybody. He could put together a super group of name it.
Yeah, and by the way, if you put Warren Haynes, and it's not for me, so I'm not going to judge it. But if you give that crowd a Sunday night Warren Haynes, the possibilities of who shows up, it's endless.
Exactly.
I mean, didn't we hear reports like Springsteen was on the farm last year?
I don't remember.
Yeah, so if he just happens to be on the farm again, that would make total sense. Stuff like that, like the possibilities of that being, you know, a stop for, you know, all my friends and family becomes real.
Yeah. I could see that. I don't know how. Rumors are that Ashley Capps is retiring, is done. I wonder, you know, do they go, is that a goodbye Ashley kind of year?
Now, wait a second. Are you saying this as news, as a reporter from the Times?
Well, that's
what
I'm wondering. I don't know. I don't think it's a secret.
Is this a rumor that you've heard?
Based on those noises when they sold to Live Nation, that it was sort of the beginning, you know, that he was nearing the end of his career. He's of a certain age. He's done this for a long, long time. I do not have this news from him or anyone specifically. It's just a rumor that I keep hearing.
Here's the crazy thing is it's almost like Tom Brady. If things are so easy for you, you know, I mean, it's not like you're getting tackled every play. You can work the system a little bit. Right. I don't know why you would ever retire. You get to do this on sort of make your own schedule, make your own life out of this, make your own world. Why not? Why not stay there forever?
You say that. I'm sure there's a lot more involved in the day-to-day stuff that, you know, he's done and wants to. You know, you and I talk to him, he loves the, I don't know if oddball or the non-traditional shows. He loves to go, you know, I mean, Big Ears is his festival. He has his own things that he likes to do, and his wife, and I think they like to travel. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just curious. Just throwing that out there. I have nothing specific.
That is going to send people's heads a rolling, thinking about the possibilities and where this goes. Because the second that you say Ashley has retired and is not necessarily part of the day to day, you start asking how much is that going to involve Live Nation taking over more of the festival, and that scares people to death.
Yeah. Well, change does, number one, but they are the 800-pound gorilla.
I understand that scares everyone, but the only difference is here we have the proof of what happens when they do take over.
Yeah.
And we've been through this, and it wasn't necessarily everybody's favorite.
It had its bumps.
It had its bumps.
Challenges.
And again, but what we've always tried to say over and over and over is that it doesn't really matter. We hope to God it doesn't matter the top, because we're not necessarily there for lineups.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just, you know, don't mess up a good thing.
Yeah. Obviously. And I do want you to hopefully take from this. We're not lineup driven people. The lineup's just fun to talk about in the downtime.
Right. And I want to throw this in, and it's local, but I'm hoping that it works out. I would love to see Strung Like a Horse, which is a great local band that is recording an album. Our friend Nick Lutzko has also got a new album coming out.
Yeah.
And you and I have both been pushing to see him play there. I would love that. Those are two good local
You
acts.
Really want to hurt his band, don't you?
Nick's?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because they're in giant cartoon heads.
I know, and but they are so much fun.
They wear these ridiculous outfits, right? And they're all dressed as monsters. And so the band is called The Gimmicks.
Exactly.
And so they all have a gimmick. And in the Tennessee heat, in the middle of Bonnaroo, you want them to wear that outfit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They deserve it. I hope they get the chance.
I do too. Because Nick Lutzko is an amazing songwriter. He deserves to have a spot and a shot in front of an audience that's not just Chattanooga. So let's bring in Jeff Cuellar and talk all things AC Entertainment, whether it's Moon River, Exit 111 Fest that's coming up next weekend, or even Bonnaroo 2020. Jeff Cuellar on the What Podcast with Brad Steiner and Barry Court.
Hey, Barry, what's going on?
How are you doing? Did you make it home safely and all?
I made it home. I'm here.
Are you still in a banana suit, Jeff? Are you still wearing a banana suit?
I actually just pulled my banana suit out of my bag as I've tried to unpack it.
You know, I don't
so
know.
I'm banana suit free at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know who at AC Entertainment drew, I don't know what you guys did to make some people mad, but how you three got chosen as banana suit people? You must have done something really, really bad, man.
I wish I could say it was punishment, but it was actually my idea.
I can
have to take ownership. This is my bad that this is happening. But yeah, so last year during the site build, Drew wore a banana suit and like did some funny internet videos. And I jokingly said to Paul and Samantha Steele, who are part of his management company, and this was, I guess Saturday Festival. I was like, if I get banana suits, I'm getting you guys in banana suits. And they go, and I pinned them each against each other. And I said, Paul, if I can get Sam in a suit, you're in a suit. And he's like, of course, she's not going to do it. I'm like, Sam, Paul's already said he's going to be in a suit if you're going to be in a suit. And she's like, well, if you've got Paul in a suit, then I'll do it. And then next thing you know, I've got Paul and Sam. I went and had a runner go get three banana suits.
Yeah.
And all three of us did it. We tried to get Drew in the banana suit, but he was like, you know, I got to leave and, you know, go have a kid. And I'm like, really? That's the excuse? Kind of a lame one.
Yeah.
With Paul and Sam out having their kids, then Drew stepped in and then jumped in the banana suit too. So we had, Brad and Rachel on our team in there, and then Drew came in at the last minute and jumped in the suit as well. And we almost had Ellie in there too. But they had some kid stuff they had to figure out.
Chattanooga, just imagine the talent you could have had if they wasted all of their budget on banana suits.
Yeah, everybody gets a banana suit.
Everybody gets a banana suit.
Sure.
So we should probably explain to anybody that was at Moon River September 7th and 8th, 8th and 9th, the Sunday, as everyone is leaving, we're getting high fives from people in banana suits.
Yeah, and it's great.
Turns out Jeff Cuellar and Drew Holcomb, I guess, is one of
them. I mean, I did the high five, and I heard the voice, and I was like, wait a second. Was that Cuellar back there? And I had to, I had to put my face in that banana suit hole just to see if it was you.
I had to rethink. I found out, Jeff, I saw you Sunday. Saturday, Barry had a little more fun than he anticipated.
Oh, is
on
that
Saturday.
Right? All right.
And I now know why. Drew's got with the old Dominic guys, the bourbon,
I bought a couple
on Saturday, and before I knew it was speaking in tongues.
Yeah, sure.
And then bought one on Sunday, and guy next to me at the bar said, what's the alcohol content in these things? And they said about 118%.
Oh, that's all. Okay. Good. Just like the just like the temperature.
It was just a little bit in there.
Ooh, so if you saw me, and I was not right.
Yeah, it was tough. The next morning I talked to Barry, and Barry said, "Did I have a good time?"
Did I say anything I shouldn't have?
Yeah, it was a great time. By the way, when you look back on a festival like Moon River, you guys' second year involved in it, what do you take away from it?
It's one of those events that is inspiring on so many levels. And it starts from really, I'd say, the top down. And to have partners like Drew, Ellie, the whole 888 management team, how invested they are in the event. And I would say for us, it's inspirational for our team and only gets us jazzed even more that we have got our artist partners that feel like we need to deliver here too. Having like even the first year, Drew, jumped around in a banana suit pre-fest and trying to have those conversations with fans. I mean, Ellie, what? She was on stage Saturday night and then Monday she's having a baby last year. And then come into this year and just that spirit and that energy. And I think Brandi Carlile kind of said it best from the stage. She's like, this is a hell of a festival. And it really is inspirational from that standpoint that when all of those pieces come together from the artist to the city and the location, the fans, the producers behind the scenes, that electric mix that kind of happened. Where it isn't, it's more than just a music festival. And I think everyone felt it from top to bottom.
And you're right about that Brandi Carlile line. And it wasn't just that. She kept coming back to the same thing over and over and over, saying how great of an experience this was for her. I mean, it's nice for you to get, some play on stage from, an artist, but to keep coming back to it over and over and over, she genuinely felt. It seemed as though that she loved this thing.
Well, and I can say because the person who was responsible for sort of driving them, I guess golf carts, whatever, they drove to town in their bus and didn't get off. So she had no idea what this festival was until they walked out on stage. So I think that reaction was genuine.
Yeah.
She was like, holy crap, what is this? This is awesome. And
her social media post this morning was like, hey, Moon River, can we be best friends?
Wow. Nice.
I mean, like that alone, I agree. I think she had a hell of an experience.
I'll tell you.
And I think you saw it from every artist that played the event. It was like, wow, it's like they weren't playing a stage. It's like they were hanging out with their best friends in the backyard.
That's right. That's right. I will say that I saw more artists hanging out at the festival walking around the grounds than I did in the artist area. Honestly, it was mostly Barry in the artist area, and
I couldn't walk out of there.
No, but it really is a testament to what you guys have curated here in Chattanooga. And the thing that I love so much is this is my first year. I didn't get a chance to see it last year, but man, it's amazing to have a place that you travel so often and you spend so much time in get completely transformed and turned into something completely different, and not just different, but done so well and executed so well. This is my backyard. I literally live up the hill from this, and it's happening within 100 yards of my house. And not to mention, I don't feel as though I saw many people that I knew.
No.
That was the other crazy thing. I thought I would see so many people that I see on a daily basis, but there were so many unfamiliar faces. There were so many people from out of town. I just couldn't have been more impressed with the execution of that thing.
We appreciate it. It's definitely a labor of love for this one for us. It was it was truly a special experience, and it's one that I know the whole team now going into year two that we're all looking forward to.
So you did such a great job a year ago or whenever it was. I mean, Brad and I have talked about it on this podcast so many times that conversation with you really was sort of game changing for us because it was inside baseball. I know you don't get compliments to your face a lot. I know. No, but it was so insightful just on how to build something like this. Mm-hmm. We based our conversation with Drew Holcomb months later, we talked to him about how do you start up a festival? And so to be able to talk about, how do you move one, with you, and we can go back to Bonnaroo, if you don't mind. I want to bring it back because we haven't really talked since. One of the things that you pointed out to Brad and I a year ago that really resonated was the whole creating and curating an experience for the fans. And when we talked, we were sort of coming off of, or the GA tents were kind of new. And so now we've got, what, year two, maybe year three of them. And we saw the numbers go up. Talk about how important that has been for Bonnaroo since 2002 to be able to make those kinds of changes and then see them work.
It's fantastic. It's one of those things that's like, I think we know the ingredients that are necessary for, you know, kind of building this dinner of Bonnaroo. And watching the landscape change as it is, you know, I don't want to say it was rinse and repeat at any point in time, but I do think that there was an element of that. And we had to take a serious look in the mirror and say, what are we trying to be? Where do we want this thing to go? And what is the differentiator? Like, why is Bonnaroo special outside of radiating positivity and bringing all these amazing people, artists, and things together? And what can we do on the farm that really no one else can do? And no one else has the opportunity to put together, along with a fan base that is willing to try and experiment with certain things. I mean, you know, Grant, over the years, we've definitely taken some swings and not connected. But to see the stuff like with the plazas and really take off, I think we all knew they could be successful. It's just a matter of kind of willing to take that risk and allowing to nurture it. To make it to where it's now, you know, a feature and focal of the site.
Let me add to that, because back to Moon River real quick for people who weren't there. This is the second year in Chattanooga, and in talking with Drew beforehand for the story that I wrote for the paper, the changes that they made I would venture to say were not on anybody's radar until they started listening and getting the feedback. For example, one of the big changes was increasing the kids area. You know, I don't know that that's something that's probably on a lot of festivals' radar, but they added changing stations and put a stage up so that Ellie, who has a kids book and a kids record out, could actually perform. Moved it over safer and over into an area that was kind of in between where the kids could play near the fountain. So, I mean, all of that just came from feedback, right?
Not even really feedback, to be honest. I mean, it's one of those things, and you kind of credit to maybe some of our staff, you know, myself, I've got two kids, but really kind of watching year one and seeing the kids that were there. I mean, it was a very family-friendly affair.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of those, like, why are we doing this? And then noticing that we kind of had an area that was a little bit of a dead area, and it's next to the carousel, you know, right next to the fountain as well, or the splash pad. And so how can we take this and make a zone out of it? I mean, same thing can be said for like Lookout Lodge. Like we tried it last year and that thing got so hot. It was so full on capacity. We're like, well, how can we make this experience better? Okay, let's pull down the door so the air conditioning stays inside and add a bigger screen outside so the big games everyone can watch. And those people that care about some of the smaller games, they can go inside, cool off, and see some sports there. But those types of things, I don't think anyone's necessarily asking for. We just saw those as opportunities to elevate the fan experience based on what we saw from the previous year's fest.
Boy, I'm sure I'm glad that Barry brought that up, because it just now hit me. I have never seen that many kids at a music festival.
Yeah, and having a ball.
Oh, my God, there were so many kids there. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
They were everywhere.
And comfortable.
And never once was I upset that there was a kid around. You know, normally
Brad doesn't have kids, if you didn't know.
I don't. And normally I would be like, why is somebody bringing a kid to a music festival? But now that I think about it, it makes total sense. And here's the other thing, too, that is fascinating about the Moon River experience, how clean it was.
Yep.
And nobody was smoking. I know that's crazy, but we have a going joke at camp at Bonnaroo that there you can't go an hour without cigarettes and farts, and you can't, that is going to be something that just envelops you.
Let's just go ahead and put it out there. Brad does not smoke.
Okay. So it's just, it's very debilitating to me when I'm just covered in cigarette smoke around certain things. But I was walking through the festival like that night, Sunday night. There wasn't a piece of trash on the ground.
Wow, everybody self-polices, man.
I saw one person in the entire festival smoking. That is unbelievable. So kids, no smoking, and it's clean. Boy, you've got something pretty special if you can maintain those three things.
Well, I got to give a shout out to Chattanooga Public Works. Their ability not only to keep the grounds clean, but the attitude they have while doing it it's refreshing. I mean, those guys take pride in their work. And I mean, simply just like emptying trash cans with a smile on your face. It's one of those things that, you know, it's not the greatest thing. And who wants to empty trash? I mean, probably most of us at our own home probably, you know, delay emptying trash just because it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole team from Chattanooga Public Works, like their just attitude and how they attacked it, smile on their face, you know, just please thank you to fans, and the fans just being respectful and grateful for the job that they're doing. Phenomenal team.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
right.
Phenomenal team.
And back to Bonnaroo for a second. So I know we're bouncing around all the entire way here, going back and forth through so much of this. There's a few threads that tied all this together. Where are you guys on the Bonnaroo process? When you're in the middle of fall, September or so, where are you right about now?
I mean, you're booking. The festival is being booked, of course. And then we are, I'd say, coming to the end of our evaluation of programs and how certain things went. And I think coming into 2020, there's a lot of stuff. There's even more self-reflection of what is working and what is not. Mm-hmm. And how to, I mean, we're a full-profit company. You know, I won't lie, and every event that we're doing, we are looking to make a profit. So it's where can we enhance the experience and perhaps allow for us to, without adding too much expense.
Well, hang on a second. Before you go any further, what constitutes in your mind or AC or the festival's mind as working?
A lot of it you could say is ancillary programs, but then it does go down to other pieces like entry. So how fast we're able to get people on the ground. Let's say that is a big one this year that going into 2020 is addressing. We feel like we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do better? And how do we make it happen? Because we're limited, you know, with land. We're limited with entrances, you know, coming off of the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
We're limited in certain areas. So it's what's causing the problem, and how can we make it more efficient and safer?
See, that's fascinating.
And so that what I would say is not working. I mean, it's working, but it's not working, in our opinion, at the highest level. That is one of those things I would say, how can we make it better?
Along those lines, and not to put words into your mouth, but you talked to me anyway on site this last time. One of the programs you got rid of that was working, you know, by some definitions, was the Roll Like a Rockstar, right? It was making money, but you didn't think it fit the mission, if I remember correctly, and you replaced it with, what did you call it, the Wild in the Woods?
Wild in the Woods, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Where in the Woods. Where in the woods. Yep.
So, I mean, that's a good example.
Yeah, that's a prime example. You know, look at what one program is servicing and then what a shift could do for everybody else. And, you know, nothing to knock the people who can afford an experience like Roll Like a Rockstar, but we felt we could deliver something on a platinum scale and allow us to open more up to our general fan or to our normal fans and really to everybody, because everyone has access to Where in the Woods. And knowing that is, you know, one of the things that we know you try to talk about trying to improve is shade and places to cool off. You know, we've been planting trees every year since the beginning. But as we all know, trees take a lot of time to grow. But that's one of the areas that we had on site that is shaded. So how can we create an experience that more people can enjoy over there?
It's fascinating to hear you describe in your terms, you know, how you guys come to the conclusion of what's working or not, because, you know, what constitutes working for maybe the general public may not be working for you guys. And it's refreshing to hear that it's not just monetary based, that I'm sure there are plenty of things that are not working as a partnership when it comes to like how you make money and how you continue to move the festival forward. But when you guys go to look and look at all the problems and you rank them from top to bottom, when you find the top problem, is it really a problem, or is it something that you guys are just like, this could just be better? Is anything really a problem that you guys are dealing with?
At this point in time, probably not.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we're definitely rolling into year 19. You know, I would say nothing at this point in time is a significant problem. Like,
yeah.
If it's not addressed, there will be, negative ramifications. So yeah, it's probably more on us, but again, case change, people change, the environment changes. So what may have been cool 10 years ago is not cool anymore.
Right.
And so you could say that as a problem.
Who would have,
I guess, another way to look at it.
Who would have anticipated EDM 10 years ago, going at it like you did. And I imagine at some point that may alter and something else replaces it or.
And when you're addressing all of these things, you're to the end of the evaluation process and you're building a lineup and you're building the roster and you're coming up with your partners, your basically the funding, the operation. And you also have a brand new festival that you have to put on here in about how many days and weeks. How do all these conversations happen at once?
I think we look at it like you look at each festival as its own festival. We recognize that, we create the competition for ourselves in a lot of places. But, each one is evaluated differently. And then after we feel like we're putting the best possible product out there, we start to compare it against some of the other experiences and things that we're doing. But mm-hmm. each piece is different. I mean, I look at every one of our festivals and where some may be somewhat similar when it comes to a lineup or we may take, a piece that we're doing over here and then how do you apply it over here?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a good example of that is even the kids section. So we did Phillies and Colts at Railbird, which was really the first time we attempted to do kind of a kids section. And that is different than the kids section we did at Moon River with the Treehouse. And a lot of our inspiration came from, I'm not hesitant to say this, Kidapalooza at Lollapalooza. I think they do a phenomenal job at engaging, those young fans. And the support that people have internally we have in terms of cultivating those fans and those families. Because as a family, if you can bring a kid 10 and under to your festival, parents are more engaged. They want to be out there. I have two kids, and if you're telling me I can get my kids in for free, then more than likely you're going to get me and my wife down there because we want to continue to have those types of festival experiences, share them with our children. So hopefully they're growing up to be festival attendees.
That's right.
And want that type of experience. But so, I mean, kind of circling back to that original question is, there's that evaluation period and there's a focus in the timelines that we put together. And then we do take that step back and hit the 30,000 foot view and say, how does this fall in to everything else that we're doing and making sure that we can continue to deliver and hopefully over deliver on that specific festival as well as every festival experience that we're putting out there.
How involved are you personally and AC in general in Exit 111?
We are partnering with C3 on that event. So we definitely have a role in there and, trying to make sure, we've definitely got, I think, more knowledge on the property than our partners do. But this is ones that we're teaming up and we're trying to produce a new event. I think what excites me the most about that event is for 18 years now, it's Bonnaroo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, Great Stage Park has been the home of Bonnaroo. We've done some smaller things like fun runs with Red Frog events, the Adventure 5Ks and some other smaller things out there, but we've never done another music festival. And the idea of putting on this rock fest in Manchester, Tennessee is exciting. And I think there are a lot of people wondering, like, how is it going to compare to Bonnaroo? And like, we don't want to compare to Bonnaroo because this is a completely different experience than Bonnaroo is, but it's finally our opportunity to do some things that maybe you can't do at Bonnaroo. You can't do it at other events. But with this property, we can.
Yeah. I think for the to the layperson, though, it seems as though it's like watching a friend of yours who has dated the same type of woman for so long, and then out of nowhere, his next girlfriend looks totally different than the last one. And you're like, what? He's got interesting tastes.
Yeah. It's going to be...
That's definitely a unique analogy, except where in this case, we can... It's okay for us to carry more than one girlfriend.
My dude.
For those of us that have been there, because a lot of people, especially around here, because it's 60 miles from here. How is the space going to be used differently? It's going to be much smaller, right? And not as much camping and what else?
So whereas Bonnaroo is primarily a camping festival. I mean, really, it's what, like less than 10% don't camp. And they're maybe in a hotel, or they're driving in each day, or they happen to be local or something along those lines. I think the majority of people who are coming to Exit 111, they're not camping. There are day tickets available for the event. So right there's a massive difference. And probably the biggest difference is it gets shut down every night. So Centaroo, or what we've always referred to as Centaroo, which I believe is called the venue for Exit 111, is it has a closing time. So it will shut down like a traditional city festival. And so if you're not camping, then you're going back and you're able to, sleep in your own bed or sleep in a bed and have that different kind of experience there. So, I mean, that right there is probably the biggest difference. And then I think programming, the stuff with the paranormal circus, some of the Red Bull action stuff, because you're in the height of what football season, both college and NFL and heck for that matter, baseball, getting into that time frame, having the mega sports bar and some of those other things that are relevant to one, that audience, but also the experience we're trying to create. It's going to be different. It's going to be very different. I also think it's going to be an older crowd. I mean, Guns N' Roses, Slayer, and those guys. So, I mean, off the bat, you're going to have an older crowd versus those, looking to see Childish Gambino and others.
Did you say that? And let me go back for a second. Maybe I missed something. Did you say that there's not camping at Exit 111?
No, there is camping.
Okay.
It is not.
But Centaroo will close.
It's not like Bonnaroo, where stages. Everyone's camping.
Okay. The reason I ask is because, and forgive me for sounding like a total idiot on this one, but I have to. Punt on some of the stuff that I just don't know anything about. I just found out, and this is after 38 years of life, that people camp at NASCAR races. Now, I didn't know this because, crazy enough, I'm not a NASCAR fan. And even growing up in Richmond, Virginia, even though we had the Richmond Motor Speedway there, I didn't know that people showed up and camped. So I got to imagine there will be plenty of people camping at this thing with their RVs. Are the camps being set up the same way as Bonnaroo's camps are set up in and around the pods that were previously built? The showers are going to be working. The bathroom's going to be working like that.
It will be different, but yes. We're trying to look to set up. I'm not going to call it like a KOA style experience, but we are evaluating it in a different way to where, if you're camping, you're coming and here's your campsite, or at least the area that you're going to be in and then be able to shuffle through. So it's one of those things that I think presents the fun challenge, is knowing that there's going to be a good number of people who are going to come in each day and leave each night. And then there's also going to be a good number of people that are staying and continuing their experience in the campground.
Where are you seeing as far as where tickets are coming from? Is it mostly a Nashville ticket region, or is it Tennessee? How far is the reach going so far?
I would say your strongest pull is going to be within 2 hours of the site. So you draw a circle 2 hours in every direction.
Interesting.
And that is really, I'd say, the sweet spot. So, okay. I mean, everything from Atlanta to even Charlotte, Nashville, of course, Birmingham, Chattanooga, Memphis, Knoxville, that kind of range is really, and we knew that going into it, that was going to be the biggest pull from where it's at. And I think, that's part of the reason why I think what makes that space so attractive is that within 2 hours, you're hitting several major markets.
Jeff, tying all this together, what we talked about today and what we talked about last time you were with us, this festival is a good example, I think, of putting everything together, right? Because you have Bonnaroo, you have a site, you have Moon River, you have Asheville, mm-hmm. others that you've done. So maybe go over some of the things that, because I know you've been talking about using great stages for several years now for other events. What was it about this event that you think makes it work? And what were sort of those, boxes that had to be ticked?
You're specific for exit 111?
111, yeah. What was it? What makes this different than the other events that makes you guys think? I mean, was it, it needed to be fall, it needed to be an older audience, it needed to be regional versus national? I mean, I'm not trying to put words in you. Just based on the conversations that we've had, I'm just trying to, you know, what was it, the items?
We feel like there's an opportunity there. You know, there are others producing events, you know, like this. The opportunity that we have with Great Stage Park, we thought there's something special here. And if we put it together, we feel like the audience is going to come. And, it, you know, being able to serve that audience, that rock audience, is, you know, that they're, you know, a lot of them are very loyal attendees to going to see, you know, a lot of these bands and being able to put these together in a different way. We just thought there was an opportunity. And, you know, the fall in Tennessee is gorgeous. So the ability to kind of camp during that time frame is an opportunity. You kind of look at the age demographic that would be coming to it, too. You know, I think they're probably less apt to camp in June in Tennessee versus in October. And then the opportunity, you know, on the sports side and some of the other pieces that are kind of falling into place here. It for us, I think it was just a chance to do something different.
Yeah, well, see, I think that's the elephant in the room. It's so different. It does lend itself to ask, are you scared?
Scared is not the right word. I mean, I think with any first year event, there's always some trepidation. Like, are people on the same page with us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do our fans agree that, you know, this was a good idea? Are they going to buy tickets? And then the reality for any first year event, you know, I think like something like Moon River, we were very fortunate to sell out in what, 8 hours the first year and like 6 hours this year, something like that. You know, that doesn't happen. That's not reality for the majority of music festivals out there. And you have to build it. And I think there is, because this is something so different, the opportunities there is, I think there, people who are coming this year are going to be blown away. And,
it's just,
you know, now there is that other list.
It's just so different. And it's like, it doesn't, like, mm-hmm. I guess it's because we know you guys, I guess, on a personal level, but more so, I can see the brands that you guys have built. And this is so completely out of your lane. And it's inspiring for one. Damn near it's dangerous too, because you're doing something that's completely mm-hmm. new. And I guess the thing that's so interesting is, you had a very specific model when you went for an inspirational guide for Bonnaroo. You had a very North Star, right? A very clear North Star. And we've mm-hmm. heard how it's manifested from year to year. The North Star for Moon River is pretty easy to find. What was the inspiration behind 111? Where did it come from? How did it become? Was there something that that you patterned it after? Or is it just because you have a space, it works?
No, they're definitely the one of the main people behind it, Tim Sweetwood, on the C3 team. You know, this definitely is kind of his baby, in a sense. So a lot.
I'm sorry, what was his name? I didn't hear what you said. What was his name?
Tim Sweetwood.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of this has come, you know, a lot of this vision for this event and how it's kind of come together. You know, it's not like we just slapped it together in a matter of weeks. It's been, the conversation's been going on for a couple of years and trying to find the right time and the right axe to launch it. And I think once, you know, we knew we had Guns N' Roses in the mix, it was like, okay, this is something we can definitely start to build around. And we knew we had other players kind of lined up. And, you know, again, we still talk about Bonnaroo in terms of how you create those lanes. So if you're a Lynyrd Skynyrd fan, but for some reason you're not a Guns N' Roses fan, there's still something for you on all 3 days. If you're a Def Leppard fan and not a Guns N' Roses or a Skynyrd fan, there's still something for you on all those 3 days. So that approach stays consistent. But a lot of this definitely came and pulled out of the mind of him in terms of where he kind of wanted to go with it and his fandom of the rock scene.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the beautiful thing about both of our organizations is we're all music fans. And we all want to see different types of experiences and where we know, hey, we've always wanted to do this, but I can't do that at Bonnaroo. Like, it doesn't fit. Right. I'd love to do this at Forecastle. It's not going to work at Forecastle, but I sure as hell can do it at Exit 111. Like, that's one of those that's like, that's something that crowd is going to really get behind.
Like the
Paranormal Circus.
To make this work as well as it does, do you have to sort of turn over the room a little bit? For instance, you've got a certain group of people in the conversation that know what the Bonnaroo audience is going to like. I'm guessing those same people who are booking the artists for Bonnaroo, not necessarily the ones you go to book the bands for Exit 111, or are they the same people?
Yes and no. I think you're bringing in probably more opinions, and you know the people that kind of have certain opinions. I mean, we've talked before about, you know, I'm definitely a hip hop head. I don't book bands, but when some of those acts are being considered, I get to have that conversation.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think there's a draw here? Do you think it fits? And so, you know, our booking agents know who the targets are and what they're going after. And when they need to have some of those more specific conversations, like, how does this fall into the mix? Like, what is it, you know, what do we think here? If we go here, what else do we need to complement that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think they are amazing at what they do because they know what they don't know. And they're not afraid to go ask questions to the people who are, you know, really digging in deep into some of the catalogs and newer stuff that's kind of coming out there, or even older stuff that's still relevant.
Yeah. I think you guys being a music fan thing, it sounds like just something everybody would say, but it's the kind of thing that shows the difference between walking around and feeling like the answer is always going to be no versus the answer is let's see how we can make it work, you know, or yes.
Yeah.
And you know, you get that feeling as a patron, like, you know, when you're walking up to a gate or something, you don't feel like you're, you know, they've got the evil eye on you. You feel like, hey, come on in, have a good time. And it makes a huge difference. You talk about the public works guy smiling and getting a high five from a guy in a banana seems silly and small, and that's what it is. And, you know, in the big picture, but at the end of the day, I walked out with a smile on my face.
I think what Barry's saying is he wants Ashley Caps and Leather Chaps. I think that's where he's going with this.
Nah, it's just that kind of attitude. It's those little things that you walk away with that, you know, you take them home, and when you add them all up, it was a pretty good day versus, you know, every turn was something negative, or so it makes a big difference.
And I won't lie that doing the banana suit thing is just as much for me as it is for the fans.
Oh,
you kind of ask, like, how am I in it? Like, the love you get from that and just the people saying thank you and like, man, I want to hug you. That was an amazing weekend. It's like, you talk about some affirmation. It really is. It totally fills your heart up. You're like, people really did appreciate what we put together here. And, you know, I'm sharing my love, the fact that you came out and you're supporting this thing, which allows me to keep doing what I do for a living. But then it's also me, you know, being goofy and showing my appreciation and that side. And it's a total give and take. And it does. It means a lot.
Well, there was a part of me. There was a part of me that was afraid you were about to give me a free sample of shampoo. Strange, like, what is this guy about to sell me? I don't know what it is. But okay, so I've got some odds and ends that I want to go through, and I know that maybe it's because we now can call each other friendly. I might be pushing it a little bit. So if I go beyond my abilities and questions that I should or shouldn't be asking, you let me know. But I want to try a couple of things. First off, how in tune to, and I don't mean surveys, I don't mean reactions that you get, but how in tune to the things that people are saying that are real Bonnarooians, whether it's on InfoRoo, the websites, the Twitters, etc. How in tune to what they're saying are you guys? Do you feel like you got your hand on the pulse or their finger on the pulse of what they're saying, what they're thinking?
I'd like to think so.
Okay. Now, what will you think if you think so? What do you think the number one thing they're saying that they either want, believe, need, feel for Bonnaroo would be for next year?
Well, that's a great question.
No, there's no pressure here. I don't mean to, like, if you get it wrong, you're out. But but I have a feeling I know what it is. But I want to see what you think it is.
I think it really comes down to the Bonnarooian code. And I think if you remember from our previous conversation, that wasn't our code. That was from the fans. And we hear it, you know, Radiate Positivity definitely is the one that probably carries true and through all throughout. But, you know, respect the farm. Stay true to Roo.
Right.
Play as a team. All of those kind of mantras, I think if we stick to that and our fans are the first to tell us, hey, that's not true to Roo. When that happens, that's when it's almost like we better check ourselves or we wreck ourselves.
Okay.
To me, that's where it really goes, is staying true to Roo and making sure that any time that we come up with an idea or attempt to change, improve, whatever we want to, you know, whatever word you want to use for it, we run it through that filter. Are we adhering to the Bonnaroo code?
Okay.
And as long as we can adhere to the Bonnaroovian code, I think we'll maintain success. Mm-hmm. And there are certain times where, you know, we may have to push the envelope of what that means. But I think as long as we're not afraid to take that chance and then admit, hey, we messed up. Yeah. That didn't work. We're going to try something. You know, we're going to fix that and do something different. Then we're always going to maintain that positive relationship with our fans and continue this festival for the next.
Well, look, I think life is a world built on a credit card that either has a lot of credits earned vis-a-vis the credits that you've spent. And I think that you guys have a massive amount of credit on the credit card to try things that may or may not work. And you can come back around and be like, eh, that's okay. They'll be fine. They've got a North Star here that's going to be okay. Okay, I'll let Barry go. Barry, what do you think the number one thing is that maybe the Twitterverse, the InfoRoos want to see about Bonnaroo next year or the years in the past?
The only thing I can come up with is a name, which is Dolly.
Ding.
Well, I actually had that
That's
conversation
where I was gonna go.
With Brian. In fact, it was kind of funny. I think you had just left, Brad, but Ted and I were talking. And he said, there's the guy. Go tell him. And, you know, this was after my fourth So, you know, I had to be a smart aleck about it. But I was like, hey, have you thought about Dolly?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to come out and say it because, look, not everybody gets the AC guys on the phone. Has anyone ever called Dolly? And I'm going to assume the question's yes, or the answer's yes.
Every year is the answer I got.
Okay. And then, thusly, what is the holdup?
Dolly.
Is it?
Certain things, yeah. You can't really speak to all of it, but okay. Yes. Has Dolly been approached? Barry nailed it. I'd say there is an open invitation for Dolly to perform Bonnaroo.
Okay.
And I'm not on the booking team, so maybe I'm not allowed to say that. But I think if we could make it happen, it's something we want to make happen. But as you guys probably know, when you're an artist that level, there's a variety of things that are kind of standing in the way, but, you know, that make up how you make your decision. And, you know, Dolly's going to do what Dolly wants to do because, well, she's earned that right.
She's earned it.
She's earned that right.
No doubt.
So, you know, would I love to see that someday as a fan? I would. Yeah. I don't think there's many artists that I can put in that top rung that haven't played the farm that I wouldn't, you know, go crazy to see live.
And that's sort of where I'm going. Is there, if Bonnaroo wants an artist, is there a price that is too much?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There definitely is a price that's too much. And we still have to, like I said, we are a for-profit company.
Yeah, okay.
But I guess part of that could be, you know, does the ticket price change that year because of it? You know, that's the part I don't, you know, I think that has to be a lot of evaluation to say, okay, if we're going to do this, then, you know, maybe this is what happens. Or do we look at things in a different way? I think there's, you know, a lot of other ideas you can probably throw out there in terms of artists that either, you know, some of them being reunited and things along those lines. And does that change how we potentially do something because it would be that major of a get?
Right.
But that then goes to what I mentioned earlier of going through our Bonnaroovian code. Does doing something like that that changes X, Y, and Z, does that, are we staying true to Roo? Or are we taking a chance that we don't need to take for that? Because you know, as amazing as Dolly would be, and this is no knock to her, as amazing as almost, you know, I could think of probably, you know, at least 10, 15 artists would be to play the farm. Does that change the fact that it is Bonnaroo? And we like to think of Bonnaroo being this special place. And if it becomes all about this one act, this one person,
right?
Are we staying true to Roo?
That's very true.
And the lanes that you talk about, I mean, yeah, do you, you know?
It's just, okay, so, how much does the talent budget fluctuate from year to year?
I think we talk about talent. Talent's one of those things that is always increasing. And it's from a standpoint of, it's, you know, that's how artists make money these days. And we understand. And I think there probably is a time where, I think probably that, and this is, you know, my opinion, it's going to have to write itself because, you know, we still have to things. You have to have portlets. You have to have waste management. You have to have all of these things for every event, you know, whether it be a festival like Bonnaroo or a festival like Moon River, all of those pieces that come together. And as we all know, business doesn't get cheaper. The cost of business seems to always be increasing. And at what point are we going to hit a price to where you can't have, you know, people aren't going to come because they can't afford it, right? Because they have to raise the ticket price, or we have to rely upon other revenue streams to be able to support it. And not that I don't believe artists should make their fair cut. I think almost too much pressure has been put on touring to where it makes it a real challenge to kind of keep producing certain things, which is, you know, why we've done some of the smaller, more boutique models, is you can control talent another way. And we've also been our own worst enemies. When you're booking so many events out there, that can hurt too. You know, where it used to be, I think, was when we had less festivals out there, your opportunity to see X person was here, or, you know, maybe three other places throughout the country.
Right.
And now you've got, you know, artists know that that's how they're making money. And when they're, I just heard like Ed Sheeran just finished like a 2-year tour.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's like insane to think about that's what's kind of happening right now, is that's what artists have to do to make the money.
All right.
When they're playing 80 dates in the U.S.
I want to put a question to rest that I've never heard the answer to, that you can either confirm or deny. When there are, from year to year, lineup to lineup, has there ever been a year where there has been money saved that has been used for the next year or in years in the future, thinking there might be an artist that you really want to go for that's going to cost you a lot of money? Has there ever been money that has been saved from one year and then moved to the next?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. We look at each year as an individual. Now we'll say that potentially there are favors that are set up to where we've done something one year, or let's just say there's a cancellation and it's like, we're going to do a make it on a future year of some sort.
Okay.
Now that can kind of happen, but each year is budgetarily its own year, and you're not going to say, okay, I'm going to save $500,000 from 2018 and plug it to 2019. No, we don't do that.
Okay. Thank you for saying that, because I've always wanted somebody to clarify that, because it's one of the more ridiculous rumors that I've heard in the past, especially in years that haven't made, I don't know, insert person happy here. Oh, they're saving all the money for you two next year. I've always hated that. So that is not how anybody runs a business whatsoever. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You can't predict the future.
You can't do that.
And this is my final one. This is my final little odds and ends that I wanted to throw out there. Do you have your set headliners done? And if not, how far away are you?
I would have to defer to my booking team on that one. I know, I can't say if the ink is dry on some of them, but I know there are some serious conversations that have happened or happening.
Let me add on this, because it gets to the lane thing, and it's especially because of knowing some of the festivals that around here that I've watched, and they all do it. They do. You guys start with the top and then build the lanes, different ways to do that?
Yeah,
I mean, it'd be hard to build the lanes if you don't know who the top is.
Yes and no. I think there are. If you look at it, even these days, the middle of the, not almost the middle of the pack, that sounds kind of bad, but the middle has become almost as important, if not more important, than some of the headliners.
Yeah.
And the headliners always draw big attention, but you'll hear it year in and year out. The favorite part of the festival was X person.
Yep.
And an X band was not in the top four line. You know, they were below that. So, there are definitely artists that we're looking at and have already been booked.
Yeah.
That are you know, they're not headliners. They're in that middle of the pack. We're like, they have to play the event. Like, we need them here. Like, their act is so amazing. And, you know, who knows? In 5 years, they may be a headliner. But no, I would say there are certain pieces that we want to put in place just because of where they may be in their cycle and where their popularity is coming after, you know, in the year we're currently in.
All right. Here's
where we think they're going to be in a year.
Here's my stab at your 2020 Bonnaroo lineup. You ready? All right. I've put a lot of thought into this. I want Barry to Barry can't see my screen. It's too bad. But this was written on July 3rd. July 3rd. I wrote
on July,
this.
Okay.
All right. So I'm good thing I wrote this down. You can see when I wrote it. July 3rd. This is my prediction of what the Bonnaroo lineup will be, and we'll get Barry's prediction here in a second. Black Keys.
And to be clear, you will get no hints.
I understand. You're right. I have
no affirmation. It's all right.
No just groans.
Give me a
no groans,
giggles. No giggles.
Not winking.
Right.
Nothing.
Okay. Yep. Black Keys, Chance the Rapper, Zedd, Tame Impala, Zac Brown, My Morning Jacket, Billie Eilish, Spoon, and Brittany Howard. That's your top two, three lines. I've got a whole list here, but there you go. That's my guess as the best guess scenario
for next year. It's not bad. I don't put that kind of thought into it.
I love it. No, because if there's anything that Bonnaroo, the underground Bonnaroo kids love the most, it's right about now when they start figuring out what is up anybody's sleeve.
We'll start seeing who's touring
who's
not.
It's the best. It's the best.
It's fun.
It's the best. And one of those names on that list, I absolutely was told, will be there. Now Jeff doesn't have to say anything, but I know for a fact one of those names will be on there because they told me specifically they were coming.
Right.
So if they blow it, I'm going to be really mad about this. All right.
Well, we'll
so there
see.
You go. That's all
I
got.
The band said that?
Yes.
Or the artist said that?
The absolute artist said it, yes. Told me. That's all I know.
Right. He's a big deal.
He's
a big deal, Jeff.
I will once the lineup is announced, I'll show you exactly who it is, and I'll show you my note that I made on July 3rd who it is. All right?
And then
you can argue with their management then.
We'll see.
Okay.
Jeff, man, you're the best.
I love it so much. I love the conversation. We could do this all day. You guys are the best. You guys are the best. We can't thank you enough for spending so much time here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the support. And this is always a fun time.
Welcome to the What Podcast, a podcast for Bonnarooians by Bonnarooians. We didn't do this earlier in the show. That's Barry Corder from the Chattanooga Times Press. I'm Brad from a top 40 radio station in Chattanooga, Tennessee. But most of all, we just love Bonnaroo, and we appreciate Jeff Cuellar coming on and talking a little bit about Bonnaroo. What I loved about the conversation, not just, you know, how, you know, they've expanded the farm and the things that they're doing on it with the Exit 111 Fest. We'll see how that goes, but what I loved was his acknowledgement that everybody in the building sort of already knows that how much we're clamoring for Dolly.
Yes, yes. I was going to say, can you turn that up so they can hear it in Knoxville?
Yes.
Yeah, they are very aware. As we said earlier, we had a chance to talk to some of those guys during the Moon River Festival, and they offer every single year, and it just has to be the right thing, and it's going to be completely on her. You know, I don't think it's money. I don't think needs the money.
Mm-hmm.
And if she, you know, anyway,
you're right. And it is really on her. And I hate putting it on her because then we're just all waiting for her to value us. Right. So you almost feel like, am I good enough for you? Do you love me enough? Well, we do. And
what are we doing wrong?
The point that I think I and others have been trying to make about this Dolly thing is it's selfish, but she embodies everything that this festival is and the reason why we love it so much. And I think that the serendipity of it all, I can't imagine there being a dry eye on the farm.
Yeah.
And I damn near think that it would be as big of a crowd as McCartney.
I agree.
She doesn't have to do nights. She doesn't have to do a big overwhelming light show. She doesn't have to do...
No.
She doesn't have to bring over a whole bunch of friends. She just needs to stand on that stage, give us I Will Always Love You, and we will be bawling like
just
babies.
Just be Dolly.
Just be Dolly.
No, that's a great point. We don't... I would be disappointed if it was a big... huge stage.
I could have her
and a piano player and a guitar player.
Do you remember last year when Brandi Carlile had that entire crowd
very similar
by a shoestring? I mean, she had them dangling, and you could hear pin drops from front to back.
Yep.
Now, whether or not you like the Brandi Carlile show or not, I loved it personally. But that's
I don't know how you couldn't like.
But that's the kind of thing that Dolly has. She has the power over a crowd. And again, I keep coming back to this over and over and over. She embodies everything that this festival is. And if there are white whales out there that they haven't gotten to, I'm sure that, you know, there's somebody that's going to tell you Stones and whoever. But the white whale is Dolly. And nobody else in the country could say that other than Bonnaroo. Coachella's not saying that.
Yeah.
You know? Governor's Ball sure as hell is not saying that. This is the place that she would be appreciated more than maybe anywhere else. She is Tennessee. She is this philosophy. Everything about it is her. So I hope she finds that out.
Excuse me. If you've never been, I mean, the Tennessee Tourism Board comes down there. Nashville people come down. You're exactly right. As much as it's a national international festival, Tennessee is front and center in that, and I can't think of anybody that represents that anymore. That, and it's interesting to me, I mean, I know your taste, you know my taste, I can see the fact that we both like her a lot, but everybody likes
that. That's right. That's
it doesn't
right.
matter the age group. I mean, I think even the EDM kids would be over there to
sing
to
Islands in the Stream. Yes,
see the legend.
It's a phenomenal point. It is amazing, and there's not many artists that no matter what you like, everybody can sing along to Dolly.
Yeah.
And there's not a person that's going to be like, oh, this show stinks.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to say that.
No, or I didn't know she did that, you know? Like, Jolene, that's her? Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see her.
Me too.
And it's such a home run.
All right, so here's what I'm hoping that you will do in the time that we have between now and whenever we decide to come back. Give us your lineup predictions. I'd love to hear what you think will actually happen. Not your wish list.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a wish list. I don't want a wish list. I want to see what you actually think the lineup will be. So you got some early footing on us. You got one up on us a little bit because now you know that Billy and Chance are completely out and Black Keys are 50-50 at best. So there you go. Make a lineup for us and tell us what you think's going to happen.
Also, we should give a shout out because they've been good to us, the Rubus guys.
Yeah, listen to their podcast. Is it good? I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, I just listened to the first one and they were working out some kinks, but they are collecting. They're taking it a different angle. You know, you and I, because of what we do and just because of the way things have worked, are more of an insider's kind of look at it.
Yeah, we sort of dork out on the nuances.
Yeah, we like that, sure. And it's great to have somebody like Jeff Cuellar who gives us that inside baseball stuff. But the Rubus folks are collecting stories, so
yeah,
call them. They had our friends Repeat on.
Good.
On the last.
By the way, I saw them open up for the Black Keys. Whew, that show.
Oh, they're another one I meant to say would probably be on my prediction list. Maybe you probably know more than I do, but I could see them being
okay.
All
right.
But anyway, yeah, go check out the Rubus podcast. Just Google, you'll find it, and or they're on Twitter.
Yeah, I'd love to. I haven't got around to listen to it, but they're such good people, and I can't imagine they're doing anything less than a stellar job at telling and I guess personifying exactly what this whole thing is.
Yeah, they want to collect all your stories, your funny, your meaningful, you know, whatever. What does Bonnaroo mean to you kind of thing?
That's awesome.
So it's cool.
Yeah, it's
so
awesome.
Check it out.
Yep, go check it out. And until we talk again, send us those predictions, and we'll hopefully be back soon.
Hey. How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year? That matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.